All right. Good afternoon. This is the Guam EPA Board of Directors regular meeting. Today's date is May 23rd, 2024. The approximate time is 4 o'clock p.m. and this meeting is being recorded. We'll go around the room. Stephen Carbolito.
Daniel Titanfall.
Brian Castro.
Steve Hollister.
Stephen Carrara.
Thank you. Hearing we have a quorum and the publication went out, we'll get the meeting started. First item, approval of the agenda. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Next one, approval of the April meeting minutes.
I'll make a motion to
adopt
the February 15th.
Okay, Fran makes a motion. Steve Hollister seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. All right, turn over for the administrative report.
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon, directors. So personnel update on, it's actually Captain DeGreen. She recently got promoted. So a direct payment has been made to USCPA in time to process Command Captain DeGrange's relocation. So we agreed to have her start officially on May 1st with the relocation of June 1st, hopefully. I know that she's working with her members to make that target date, but in the meantime, she is working remotely. She's working with Region 8 and their laboratory for test methods in preparation for the emerging contaminants laboratory that we will set up. Recruitment-wise, we announced 5 EHS-1 positions, so that's going to close next week, Tuesday. We also have a chemist position, 1 chemist-3 position, which is a departmental hire, 1 environmental tech, and the environmental inspectors remain on a continuous announcement. We also completed interviews for biologist 1 positions. We have 2 available, and that was the week of May 14th. 2 selections were made. The 4 that were on the certified list were all preferential hires. However, 2 declined interview and 2 did come to the interview. However, we did give them notices of recruitment, and 1 declined. So one is going to be onboarded. So we're asking for a supplemental list to fill that second position. So currently, as of May 20th, we have 53 full-time employees. Budget and procurement, we're still ongoing with the FEMA reimbursement, so there's nothing new to report there. Again, we're still waiting on the reconciliation for the arrears for the ops building with Guam Ancestral Lands Commission, so nothing to report there as well. Agency headquarters, we're still waiting on DPW to move forward with the solicitation of the architectural and engineering services for the new building. We did propose additional requirements, so we'll see where that goes. We'll give you an update as it becomes available. We're also exploring options to dispose of tires on the site, and that'll be discussed later in the agenda. We also submitted our mid-year report to US EPA Program Manager Carl Goldstein. Let's see. So we haven't had any feedback or any problems with our mid-year report. I know that you wanted to have a breakdown of permit activity. Do you want me to go through?
You don't have to go through it. No, just it's provided.
Yeah. So all applications, we did receive 83 within the previous month up until May 17th. And then we processed and issued 146 permits.
And even a part of this that is important is how many you guys have responded to, even if they were deficient, because that shows that you guys are cranking them out.
Right.
Because that wouldn't be in the issuances column, I think. Because
okay.
Issuance, I think, is signed, so the amount that you guys have cranked out is even more than this.
Right. So do you want us to include code letters?
Yeah.
Or? Okay. We'll provide that to you. Policy-wise, we did attend a public hearing for Bill 269, which is relative to standardizing labeling and testing of bottled water. So that that bill seeks to amend the Safe Drinking Water Act by adding a new article to set bottled water labeling standards, exemption and provisions for random testing of locally bottled water, potentially imported bottled water. So we did provide oral and written testimony to ask the legislature to reconsider this bill and take no action since we have the authority to promulgate rules and regs for monitoring and other requirements specifically for bottled water companies under 10 GCA 53107. But really the sealed commodity of bottled water really falls under the purview of FDA and DEH, Division of Environmental Health under Public Health. So we did point that out, that we didn't want to overstep or duplicate efforts, whereas there was already rules and regs and laws already enforceable under DEH. Also, we for Bill 283-37, which is relative to inspecting imported bottled water, introduced by Senator Dwayne St. Nicholas. So no hearing date was set. So we only submitted a fiscal note to BBMR on May 1st. So that bill proposed that bottled water produced outside of the U.S. will be prohibited from importation for sale on Guam prior to DPHSS performing inspections and verifying that the imported bottled water has been tested and certified with standards in accordance to Guam's Safe Drinking Water Act. It also authorizes and mandates Public Health Director to promulgate and enforce rules and regulations and standards for imported bottled water produced outside of the U.S. with the advice of Guam EPA within 6 months of the proposed enactment. Provisions for the bill require importers of bottled water produced outside of the U.S. to have it tested in accordance with U.S. EPA standards and have the test results submitted to DPHSS prior to the promulgation of rules and regs within 3 months of the bill's enactment. The bottled water is already regulated under FDA, so we sort of felt like we were again duplicating efforts. So we didn't want to do that. Bill 55-37 is relative to funding the Environmental Trust Fund via continuous annual appropriations from 20% of use tax collections. And this was introduced by Senator Perez, and we had a public hearing on May 20th. Currently the law in 11 GCA 28122C says 20% of use tax collected in the previous fiscal year shall be appropriated to the Guam Environmental Protection Agency Environmental Cleanup Fund to cover the costs associated with preserving Guam's natural resources. So we don't have and never established an environmental cleanup fund. So this law kind of modernizes and clarifies that the 20% of the use tax collected should go into an already existing established fund, which is the Environmental Trust Fund. So that would make it available to us within 20 days of its collection if it were to pass. So we supported that. Currently, the Environmental Trust Fund is funded through 2% collection of assessed commercial industrial liability insurance premiums paid in Guam for individual companies on Guam. So we get about roughly a little over $400,000 from that 2% collection fee from commercial and industrial liability insurance. But there are some restrictions on the expenditure from the ETF. So only 25% of the fund can be used towards programs which support prevention of environmental problems. And then no more than $5,000 for any hazardous waste cleanup. And in this, you know, socioeconomic environment, like $5,000 for a haz waste cleanup effort is really nothing. So we asked to modernize, we asked them to modernize the Environmental Trust Fund enabling statute to allow more flexibility. So this law only only allows for that 20% collected use tax to go into the environmental trust fund. Then Senator Perez or another senator would have to proffer a new bill that would allow flexibility within the environmental trust fund. So that's what we testified on. So one of the major things that we wanted also to be modernized in the environmental trust fund is to address issuing permits and clearances in an expeditious manner, putting more personnel out in the field for deterrence and compliance, particularly in solid waste management and illegal dumping and stormwater management. So we want the environmental trust fund to really fund solid waste program and activities. And also then the third focus is strengthening enforcement in response to reoccurring environmental violations. Let's see, program projects partnerships. We did have a courtesy meeting with the new MCOG president, Mike Brown, on April 19th. So we met with him and we addressed the reconciliation of the invoicing services under the MCOG environmental cleanup program. And then we also briefed him on the work with MCOG and how that RRF is managed. Also, we had US EPA's permit office personnel come visit. And they're the permitting personnel that oversees the open detonation. So RCRA, they're RCRA permitting personnel. So we did joint inspections of Naval Base Guam and Anderson Air Force Base open deck ranges. And then we also met with local community groups like Protehi and the Tecten to further address concerns that they had with the OD permit and the impacts they wanted to address. We had also a courtesy meeting with U.S. Navy Undersecretary Eric Raven on May 2nd. So the agency provided a briefing on the permitting process and environmental review on military construction projects on Guam. And feedback was provided between the agency and the undersecretary about our strengths and weaknesses in permitting, the challenges we face, and the outlook of permitting military construction projects throughout the life of the buildup. So that was a very productive an informative meeting with him, so we were happy to have an audience with him. Also, the MOA between MCOG and the agency was signed by the governor on May 2nd, and you had already approved an authorized amount of $1 million, not to exceed $1.5 million for the purposes of the MCOG island-wide environmental cleanup program. We also had an ORDOT consent decree status hearing on May 8th, so we appeared before U.S. District Court Judge Francis Haidinko Gateway to provide information on our position on the RCRA trust agreement from the ORDOT dump settlement award for post-closure. We also participated in a stakeholders meeting with GPA and GPA contractors to explore the feasibility of using liquid natural gas at the Ukido power plant. So we met with GPA and their contractor, Stanley, to discuss the environmental impacts and potential permitting requirements for importing and supplying the new power plant with LNG. And GPA and its contractors are statutorily required to conduct a feasibility study of the use of LNG. So as they said it would take about a year for them to do that baseline study. And in the meantime, we'll just stay engaged with what they need. Also update $560,000 from the SWIFER grant is funded, and we developed the MOA between Guam EPA and Guahan Sustainable Culture for community gardening and composting training, and that was routed to BBMR. Do we need to go over that? Because we talked about the SWIFER grant and the partnership with
Yeah, can we go over that?
Huh?
Yes.
You want to go over it? Okay. So the purpose of that award is to enhance Guam's effort to advance zero waste by providing home composting and gardening training to all of Guam's villages. The program is assembled with a robust system of incentives to increase participation and support for technical assistance and data collection. Training and follow-up will be executed by the sub-award recipient, which is Guahan Sustainable Culture, with us overseeing grant administration. So Guam Sustainable Culture will perform the following program activities designed to implement our plans by educating individuals and communities on composting practices for their homes. By diverting food waste from landfills to composting, we can create nutrient-rich soil for gardening projects. And then an update on the draft Tumon Bay Total Maximum Daily Load, or TMDL, was developed from last meeting. I erroneously said that you had the report, but you have the report now. And the public comment period and review period for that was March 19th through April 18th. So a TDML is the allowable load for of a specific pollutant that can be discharged into a water body and meet water quality standards. So these TDMLs are developed for dieldrin and total chlordane because the latest sampling study supported the continued impairment status for the parameters of concern. A TDML developed for the agency by USEPA contractor and favorably reviewed by Region 9. The Clean Water Act and implementing regulations require public comment on the draft TDML report prior to USEPA approval. We established a 30-day review and public comment period seeking comments from the general public and other interested parties. A public notice was posted on the agency website and media platforms, but no comments were received from the public. So that is also in your... we also developed a fact sheet, which is on our website. So that's available for anybody to read.
So what's the next step after that? Since you didn't receive any public comments, is there anything that you want to do?
No, so the TDML will be our I guess our baseline. So when we do testing and it reaches that baseline, then there's action.
Right now, it's in the hands of USEPA, since they already preliminarily reviewed it from the contractors. Everything looked pretty good, but we just needed to meet the requirement of it being public notice. So the next step is for USEPA to take action on it, and then we'll do our best to try and implement some kind of a program. But as you know, those two particular pesticides, they've been banned since 1980, so they may be seeping up just from the groundwater and going into
Runoff.
Yeah, as runoff or stormwater runoff or leaching from the aquifer when there's water that is infiltrated into the aquifer. So you just have to be diligent and probably have to do another series of monitoring just to see, whether it's.
But only for 2 months, right?
For 2 months.
Only for 2 months.
Okay, so if it's like being testing positive and failing the attain the consumption of the designated use, like what are the remediations for that?
I'm assuming if it's for
testing, or is this just for baseline, or
is it if it meets or exceeds the threshold?
Right now, the impairment is in defining in fish tissue, so the consumption designated use is the one that's being impaired. So,
are we putting signs, or are we warning people?
We have to collaborate with public health because they're actually the agency that issues
the consumption
advisories.
So are they aware of this situation?
We can
probably
need
them. Yeah. But we want to make sure, and I think the contractor is recommending, another round of monitoring for the fish tissue, because we want to make sure that if there's any evidence that it's declining, then it's just by natural attenuation that we're losing it. But I don't think we have any control over those particular pesticides because it's not being used. And the same way it's showing up in our
You probably get different readings than during the dry season and wet season.
There's a lot of people fishing in 2 months.
So I guess that we'll work with US EPA to follow up on that.
Find out what
advisory.
The next steps.
So work with them and Department of Public Health and Social Services if there needs to be an advisory.
That concludes my report, Chairman.
Thank you, Michelle. Questions, comments?
On the permitting, there was a backup, but if I remember correctly from last meeting, we were down to only one fellow being able to permit. I mean, because somebody was on vacation, someone was on medical leave or something.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
So I'm just wondering how, I mean, who did the permitting and how many were, I mean...
The backlog?
Yeah, how we caught up so well with one person.
Because he serves as a reviewer and an acting chief engineer. But he was off island for 2 weeks, so it was only a 2 week delay in his review, but he was, he really had to work overtime to catch up.
And then, just because we don't have a PE, we're doing permanent, okay. So, just how does this compare from when we did have a PE looking at this stuff?
I want to say that on average, when Captain Bearden was on board, he averaged about anywhere between 160 to 200 permits a month.
Okay, so this is about...
Yeah.
Okay.
In that ballpark.
Okay. Okay. And then, anybody else? No? And then, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then on the bills, wasn't Perez's bill on household trash pickup, wasn't that this last, between the last meeting and now?
You're
like for everybody?
The universal
correct.
Trash collection? I have to check if that was not.
I think they voted on it, but
it got vetoed.
It got vetoed.
But the public hearing was before that.
Okay. But there wasn't any explanation for the veto? She didn't.
The bill was vetoed. Yeah, I don't know if you caught that in the media. Yeah, so the issue was the funding source to start up the subsidy on on the lower income households that may not be subscribed to trash service. So that was the latest from the governor's office about that.
So I have a question about your meeting with the, you said president of the mayor's council?
Yes,
yeah.
The new...
So did they offer any, like, solutions, or...?
So with him being so new, he had just, I want to say it was like maybe even just a couple days or even a week that he had been tapped as the new MCOG president. But the one thing we emphasized was reconciling the two previous year RRF funds, which was still about over $600,000. Oh, it's reconciled. Oh.
So just an update on that. The closeout for the FY21 is in process. It's almost complete. They just have questions on 8 POs. I'm sorry, 18 POs, but the refund back to the fund will be $221,771 for FY21. FY22 has been completed, and they will be returning $337,040.40. FY23, the rollover that they did not use was $176,100, and they've already issued out POs for abandoned vehicles for the collection and processing with that 176. However, they're in the process of de-obligating $282,708 that they will be able to reuse. And then, of course, based on your authorization and the MOA went through, the $1 million has already been released. They have the funds, and they are currently in the process of issuing out POs. So their programs are all ongoing.
So we're back on track.
Yes. Finally, after all these years.
So we, that's good to hear that we're closing out all those RF fund reports. So the MOA was signed on May 2, but it seems like there's no hiccup in the program because they're allowed to roll over prior year funds, or is
just
there...
FY 23.
So
just the FY 23,
yeah.
But we also released the FY 24, the $1 million. They already have it in their account.
After May 2.
Yeah, after, yeah, everything is all completed.
Yeah. I mean... Could they have spent more money between October 1 and May 2, or did they just have so much money they couldn't spend it?
They just, as you can see from, you know, prior years, their bookkeeping hasn't been really very stellar, so I guess they didn't realize that just for FY 23 alone, that was almost over $400,000 that they
yeah.
had in their books that they didn't spend. So, with the release of the $1 million and the potential of another $500K, and everything that they were rolling over for FY23, it's going to be over $2 million in the pot. So they just absolutely have no reason to complain
mm-hmm.
That there's no funding for them. The problem is they're not processing soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
And look, we're already in the end of May, and they're just now releasing.
Right.
That's through no fault of our own.
Okay, that was my
I
next
just
question.
Want to clarify that.
Yeah, so the it not getting fully executed until May 2, the holdup's not with
right.
us, obviously.
Right.
Okay, good. Good.
Always good not to get blamed.
What, how about the topic of Deldrin? Because it looks like the new folk starts on Guam June 1st.
She's already started. I mean, she's already onboarded as of May 1st. But
okay.
Hopefully to be on island physically by June 1st.
So what's the next action item for the Deldrin topic?
So with Deldrin, we actually spoke with Patrick Wilson, the senior toxicologist with US EPA yesterday. And, you know, he has had some personal issues that he needed to resolve. He has been at an emergency response in California, had just returned back to the office. So after talking to him about his availability, he will be flying out with Carl Goldstein the week of June 8th to the 15th. So, you know, he'll provide us, meaning the government, with a brief. And then we are looking to schedule a public hearing on June 14th.
Okay. Sounds good. And whatever happened to the bill for GIPA, they have its own attorney.
So that's still in the works.
Okay.
Yeah, we did provide our testimony on that, so we're just waiting for it to be put on session.
Okay.
Hi, sorry, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, so Chair, you're referring to Bill 4249. That bill was introduced and placed on session agenda last month. However, it was referred back to committee. So it looks like the committee will be making some amendments or further reviewing it. And the hope is to have it placed back on session agenda in another future session.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Anyone?
I can't come soon enough.
I know. Anyone else have anything? Thank you, Michelle. Go back to the agenda. Next item is tire shredder discussion out of the RRF.
Yeah. So in a previous discussion, maybe even months ago, maybe even maybe more than a year ago, there was a discussion about using $2 million out of the RRF to get rid of tires that were on the Dedido property where we're going to build the new headquarters. I don't know if you recall that that discussion. But then Mawar hit, right? And then as part of our transition debris collection, we took tires. Even though they were not FEMA-related debris, we took the tires. So now we have this problem with tires. They were collected at all three sites, you know, Dedido, Eval Point, and Teeson. So if you pass by any of those sites, you'll still see tires there. You know, we just had that $6 million cleanup at the Dedido site, but they didn't take the tires, so tires still remain. We cannot move forward with any type of construction until at least those tires that were collected from Mawar are removed. So then the discussion was, you know, if we had this, you know, $2 million that we kind of had set aside to get rid of whole tires that would be shipped off through a, you know, a company, why don't we consider buying a tire shredder, shred the tires that not only are on our property, but to take care of the Mawar tires. And we all know that that's, you know, there's a problem with getting rid of tires on Guam. After Mawar doing the recovery, in daily meetings, there was a push to procure a tire shredder, the tire shredder services, but that just never, it didn't materialize, and there are still these tires that need to be disposed of. You know, we had this discussion of whether or not we could partner with DPW and GSWA to purchase a tire shredder to get rid of Mawar tires and our existing tires and maybe, you know, tires that are in illegal dump sites. We would purchase a tire, it would be owned by DPW, it would be maintained and used at Lidzon landfill. So during the post-recovery efforts, GSWA indicated that they would take shredded tires, but they had to meet a certain standard. And that General Manager Slyke said that he could maybe use a portion of the landfill where he could stage that shredded tire material. And then we recently had a discussion where he proffered purchasing the tire shredder and maybe using $2 million. Let's say that he purchased a tire shredder, it would, you know, be owned and operated by GSWA. They could shred our tires and Mawar tires, but we would then use maybe the $2 million to pay the tipping fee. So that's still kind of being negotiated. So initially when we were thinking, okay, we'd use that $2 million to maybe purchase a tire shredder, to now going into the discussion that GSWA may purchase the tire shredder and then we would use our funds to pay the tipping fee to get rid of our waste tires.
Mm-hmm.
So that is still kind of evolving.
Okay.
So you shred all the tires, you missed it. What happened to all the shreds after you shred it?
So he would use it as drain material at Lidzon, but it would have to meet a certain standard before he could use it. So we're kind of still working that out.
A certain standard? What do you mean?
I guess the condition of the tire and whether or not it's suitable. I don't, can you expand on that?
So there's certain specifications that's needed for use as or use in place of drain rock type material that you would normally use in surface water runoff management, storm water management, and septic systems. So the zero waste management plan was approved by the board last year, and it included the beneficial use of tire-derived aggregate. And the tire-derived aggregate in this case here would be used in septic tank systems in place of clean drain rock. It actually creates a beneficial bacteria that is far superior than clean drain rock for some reason, and it lasts longer. It could also be used for stormwater diversion management. So you have water that is washes off on your property vacated on a percolation trench. The percolation trench is used, it uses a clean drain rock in its application. So
like a French drain?
Correct.
Yeah.
And then you would use a tire dry aggregate in that place, provided that it meets certain specifications on the size.
So it wouldn't leach all the chemicals in?
So there's this 6 PPD that is a, it's kind of like, I like the, it's a preservative, it protects it from UV radiation. And there's some studies that indicate that, like turf, it you know, direct contact with human,
mm-hmm.
it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But in this application, it's separate from human. It's underground, it's covered with trenches, and there's also a study that was conducted by Jacobs a number of years ago that indicated that there's a rinse process, or you can use a, it's kind of like a fabric made out of, it's a fabric made out of, I guess, charcoal liner type fabric that can be used for it. But in the end, you know, you're dealing with a chip, you're not dealing with chrome rubber that goes airborne, and you're not dealing with people rolling around in the turf or in the playground with it. So that's a study that was actually...
How much bigger is it than the stuff you have on the AstroTurf and all that?
The AstroTurf is almost chrome rubber type,
right.
Consistency,
yeah.
Like sand.
Yeah.
As opposed to chips, which is 2-inch minus and 3-inch
okay.
minus that you would normally use for a percolation trench or a septic
okay.
system.
Because it says in this write-up, it says that the tires just would release chemicals into the ground and water. And I don't understand how. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, before we didn't allow tires into the landfill, and that's why we have to send them up island.
So the tires that were not allowed to go into the landfill were whole tires
mm-hmm.
and quarter tires. But if you're going to use it for beneficial use in place of clean drain rock or drain rock type material, I believe Lazon was proposing to use it as a bedding material for a staging area, because that area is kind of, you know, it gets pretty muddy.
Right.
So currently they use glass and cascal so that the equipment don't sink into the mud when it rains.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be using it for those types of applications as well.
So the runoff from the chip tires won't hurt the water then? I mean...
That area is, it's all included into their...
It'd
you know, it's
like
all collected into a leachate collection system
okay.
that contains most likely all those other chemicals that we're talking about, plus PFAS
yeah.
and other emerging contaminants
okay.
that we need to address. So I think that's the best area for it to go to.
And then if we did this, we wouldn't have to... The trade-off would be not having to pay for to ship everything off island. Will we take all the tires that on Guam and take them down there, or
do
we still ship them off island?
Many times?
Yeah, so I mean that still needs to be discussed. You know,
mm-hmm.
my bargaining was, you know, to take care of Mawar tires and the tires at the Dedido our new site.
Right.
And however, you know, if GSWA purchases a tire shredder,
mm-hmm.
How their operations would. What their operations would entail, we still have to decide.
How much does that, would that run, the machine?
I don't know.
Because
I
was just wondering how long the payoff would be to make money back from the, where, I mean, if you're buying a $2 million machine.
Right, we would, and that's why if they bought it, then we would still be responsible for the tipping fee. So whatever we brought in to be chipped, we'd have to pay for it. But at least we... You know, the intent of that $2 million that we reserved was to get rid of tires from our Dedido property and you know, they had discovered you know, those buried tires in the back of the property.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of tires
mm-hmm.
on our property that need to be
disposed. Well, there's a lot all over Guam. We could get rid of the ones and not have to pay $7.50 a piece.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly could be another RRF option in addition to the mayor's cleanup program further down the line.
For the debtor, it'll probably be Mawar. I mean, couldn't we just rent one?
We've tried. I think that was part of the post-recovery efforts was to put out an RFP for tire shredding services. And I know that while we had heard there was two on island, it never went through.
I'm just wondering if we have that many tires, is it worth buying?
So we estimated, at the very least, between the three transition sites after Marwar, 10,000 tires. And they estimated the buried tires on the property to be about 50 to 100,000 tires.
Seriously? Holy cow.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Wow.
Some of those tires up in the Derrido site were... You know, the ones that were piled up, they can visibly see, but as USEPA and their contractors were starting to clear and clean, they discovered some that were buried as well. That was not a part of the original estimate.
Yeah. And we don't know how far down it goes, but that's the estimate.
Well, above the aquifer.
Do you need anything that, like, doesn't require, like, cleaning those tires, or are you just, like... put it through the machine?
We don't know. I mean, I don't even know.
But then that's another labor cost.
What that's going to entail. Because we haven't even started to unearth any of those tires that are still left in place at this point.
So, what are we being asked to do then? Help them buy one?
No. So, at this point, we had already, I think there was already a previous discussion in previous minutes, that acknowledged $2 million to remove the tires, because we knew there were tires on the Dedito property, so it's already been approved to use that $2 million, so we've already set that aside. But now it's just further discussion with GSWA as to whether or not we're going to buy the machine, or GSWA is going to buy the machine.
But no, we haven't deliberated using any funds for it yet.
Right.
Yeah, we've just obligated money to
get
remove
rid of the
tires.
Yeah. Right.
Then the question is now how to
remove
the tires. And I mean, one question I have, and we have, you know, Mr. Robichman in the room here. If the government gets in this business, how does it impact that business? Because there is an ongoing need, in addition to getting rid of those tires at the new site, and I don't know if this is the forum to solicit comments from the private company, but at some point that has to be, I think, should be addressed to figure out how to tackle this problem.
If you'd like, I can give you my take on it. That may be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I don't think it's a bad idea at all for the government to own a shredder to take care of the government stuff, the big tire piles in the jungle that come up, and stuff like Marwar when that stuff comes, and things of that nature. But as far as competing against the private industry, that probably wouldn't be too good an idea. At that point, I'd probably say you can do it all, you know, step out. So it's, I think there is a, you know, a good rationale for having one, you know, for these circumstances in Dedido and Marwar. And the reason we haven't been able to step up and take care of some of this stuff is we were down for 3 to 4 months after the typhoon.
Mm-hmm.
And the system has been a little sketchy even since then. Right now we're down again for another week and a half, because we had some a depot team come out, inspect it, and they said, well, there's some critical parts that that you need to replace immediately or you're going to risk losing your machine. So we shut it down and speed air shipped in all the materials to fix it that we need. So, and then we've been under a lot of pressure from the fire department and public health, but primarily the fire department, to get all these commercial sites cleared out. I mean, they were at my office about 2-3 times a week saying, hey, this site has still got too many tires, you gotta help them. And so we're still in catch-up mode. You know, and once we get the system stable and we can work all these commercial sites down, then we could look at working on the mall war stuff and legal dump sites or whatever you guys need. But I don't think it's a bad idea for you guys to have one for contingency purposes and to do the governmental and the legal sites and all that stuff. I think that's a pretty good idea. Or if our system goes down, if they wanted to step in and take commercial stuff, you know, that would be probably okay too. But on a regular basis, it's probably not the best to compete with the government, compete with a private entity.
Are you currently taking tires as part of the MERS?
We have been, but right now we're shut down, like I said. But normally we do. We've always taken their tires because we're the only one.
Right.
And it was it mostly power issues related to
some
you?
Some of it was power. The roof of it, that canopy right behind your office, blew off, and so water was getting into everything, into the motors and into the electrical components. So some of that had to be replaced right away, and then it weakened some other stuff that later on had to be replaced when it came to light that those systems were weakened. So yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle getting it back to the consistency it was prior to Mahwah. But we brought in a depot team to look it over from Korea, and they gave us these recommendations and said, like, get these parts immediately and get it up and running.
Because I thought in the past, all the aggregate, I guess, or the end grounded product had to be shipped off island. And I remember there was discussion about using it as cover at the landfill. I guess now we're revisiting that, and that is an acceptable use of it, or, I mean, because I imagine that changes the whole dynamics of grounding it, you know, grinding up a tire, because it costs a lot of money to get it off island. And if it doesn't have to get off island, it changes the dynamics of it. And,
I think the way the permit was written up is, you know, it says the last resort. If you can't export it, it has to go somewhere. It has to be managed. And what better place to do that than the landfill?
Yeah.
So, and that's what's written up in the permit as well. It's not a first choice, but it's as a last resort that it could be used for that purpose. And, you know, Jacobs, again, they did the study, they made some recommendations, they did a pre-wash of the tire derived aggregate. You can use granulated carbon cloth that you can put down in its place to absorb whatever may leach out. And it's not an arm and a leg for the actual cloth that is used, or the fabric that's used, so it's something that is doable according to the study. Cal Recycle uses it all the time in their engineering designs, and that's where we kind of got the idea to beneficially use tire-derived aggregate, because it's not just a Guam problem, it's a worldwide problem, you know. So, and there's two other companies that are also looking at getting permits to do it. One company, you know, they have a fleet of heavy equipment, and they actually have their unit on island and is going to go through the permitting process to have it, you know, permitted. And they specialize on large tires, not the passenger tire types. So, and that's always been a problem, is the, you know, the large tires. tires that come off these heavy equipment?
And we cut them with a shear, that's what we do now. I can't go through the shredder. We only cut it in like 4 or 5 pieces and then ship it to India.
Well, I remember in Philadelphia, some guy was putting them onto the highway and they caught fire and they melted the highway. And there is, I mean, in my simple mind, there's a lot of energy in those tires. Somebody's got to figure out how to get that petroleum product out of there, and because it'll burn forever, and there's got to be a way to do it. But
yeah, and that's our concern. I mean, you know, we've got $6 million already invested in our property with another $6 million left to go. And with those tires on that property, US EPA told us that they're a fire hazard and we need to do something about it. But also, Teton, it's heavily used, right? So those tires are an eyesore, you know.
What are they? I remember they were here.
I
just drove by it. Maybe I'm just blind to it now.
Yeah. Well, it used to be the Estes, they're still there. So.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Maybe it's like my house. I'm just used to all the junk around.
On a non-malware year, what's the typical maintenance on that?
We have to change knives about every, say, 4 months, and it's about 20,000 to change out the knives, including knives and labor. Then electricity, they're really it's a power hog. This is 1,000 amps at 460 volts, so it does eat up some power every month, probably 4,000 a month of power. And then got maybe 3 to 4 people working it at any one time.
Really?
So, yeah. Load them up, handling them, preparing everything. So it's not a real cheap proposition.
I assume someone had to go off island to learn how to maintain the thing, change things out, or does a company come in?
We sent some folks off island, and we also have a depot team in Korea that comes out. If there's any major issue, then check it out. But you wouldn't need a system as big as ours. Ours weighs 60,000 pounds and costs $650,000, and that's a reconditioning machine. So for you guys, that would give you more of a mobile system that you could move from place to place, move it to the pile, wherever the pile is, and then shred it and then take it away. Take it to the
village.
So. The tire shredder?
Right. Today, I'll get tomorrow, Santa Rita.
But there's so much discussion to be had, especially with GSW.
Mm-hmm. So the ideas for it to become on the RF. So, but I'll say again, we haven't deliberated and voted on using the RF funds for this purpose yet. Okay. And my understanding is the RF can only be used for approved programs. So does this fall under one of them?
So I think with the new law, because we can now enter into an MOA with DPW, which was our partner in removing the tires initially and transferring them to not a recycler, but whoever would take the tires away. So that was part of what that money would have been used for, was to pay for services services for DPW to haul that away as part of our MOU. Because we can enter into the MOU with
DPW. Yeah. Okay, so that's the one we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it would be different now if it were GSWA purchasing. Then it's a service and we would have to pay the tipping fee.
Right, so if it's different from going through the DPW program, it hasn't been shown to me that that's authorized under the law.
Right.
Okay. All good?
I have one comment. So for, in this particular case, it's Lazon, but, you know, in a wider universal view, it could be used in engineering applications around the island. And that's the potential use of this tire drive aggregate.
Yeah.
Utilizing the reactor core matting. That's a matting that I was, that keeps escaping my mind for some reason. And or doing the 48-hour wash or rinse on it.
I just want to share a story. I already shared it with the director, and he knows. I'm going to say it. All right, in Maine, they had the sludge from the sewage treatment plants, and they said, you could use this as fertilizer. And the state EPA approved it. They used it all over the state, and now so many farms are contaminated with PFAS from the sewage treatment plant. So you may solve one problem, but create another problem with aggregate. Tires are different. Like you say, you wash it, you do this, you do that.
Yeah, your kids are playing, swinging, washing your cars on it. It's driving on long roadways. Most likely have airborne particulates along the easements. Nobody's testing for. It has all that same stuff. So if it's such a big deal, where is it? Show me it. There's nothing in the books right now for it. You know, so there's nothing. Until somebody proves otherwise, you know, that's something that is a concern. You know, if it is a concern, it'd be a high priority concern, just like PFAS is. Yeah.
Okay. Next one, updates on notices of violation.
I don't have any updates. Again, because we don't have an assistant OG, I don't have any updates on any violations.
Okay.
So you guys are issuing NOVs?
No, we are issuing NOVs. They're just, you know, we don't have...
There's no update on the old ones, and there's no new ones yet.
There's a handful of NOVs in queue right now, but we're not going to say that it's an issue yet. So we can't talk about
it. Yeah, it's not an issue yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else? Anyone have any other comments? All right, hearing none. Our next meeting date is Thursday, June 20, third Thursday of June.
All right.
All right, is there a motion?
I may have trouble getting
I'll make
to
a
that.
Motion during the meeting.
One sec. Steve, are you able to make that?
I might have trouble getting to that.
Aren't you retired? What kind of trouble could you have, for God's sake? It's not like you gotta work.
Right? Yeah. I don't know if I'll be able to make it here.
So
on the 20th, maybe I go and do the 13th or the 27th. I know that's
also if anybody has any suggestions for additional board members, I would be glad to push those names forward.
So
I've been giving names and they were like, oh yeah, that sounds good.
Brian.
Yeah, Bearden. Chief Bearden.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So he also likes the idea of that use.
No, I don't disagree.
So you can't make the 20th for sure?
I'm just with the site papers.
Because we could 27th would be the next option.
I have to check. Can I let me look.
We also have something on that day. Administrator does.
On the 20th?
But let me just ask her.
I could probably make that.
Which one?
The 20th. If you're gonna have it on the 20th.
20th?
And Michelle, you can make the 20th?
Yes, I'll ask to reschedule.
Yeah, her other meeting.
Okay, Steve, if you can make the 20th, we'll keep it scheduled for third Thursday. All right.
Great.
Fran made a motion to adjourn as our second.
I will second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. I just might have to be remote.